Next, coming up, we've got a guest who is really one of the leaders in the world as far as helping people to get out of poverty. Paul Pollack is the co-founder and the CEO of Windhorse International. And it's a for-profit social venture with a mission of inspiring and leading a revolution in how companies design, price, and market their products that benefit 2.6 million people who live on less than $2 a day. Prior to founding Windhorse in 2008, Paul founded DREV, which is a nonprofit organization to create and design revolution, enlisting the best designers in the world to develop products and ideas that will benefit the 90% of the people on Earth who are poor in order to help them get their way out of poverty, earn their way out of poverty. Paul is best known for his work with the Colorado-based International Development Enterprises, IDE for short, a nonprofit he founded in 1981, which is dedicated to developing practical solutions that harness the power of markets and attack poverty at its roots. IDE has ended poverty for over 19 million of the world's poorest people, making radically affordable irrigation systems delivered to farmers throughout the world through small-scale entrepreneurs and operating private sector access to markets for their crops. And while we try to get Paul on the telephone, I will set it up for you that even though we as Americans are some of the most generous people on the planet, we really need to help work with others to get them out of poverty. Paul has identified four major revolutions that have to happen. The first is the water revolution, where he is taking charge. The second is a revolution in agriculture. The third is a revolution in markets, how people get their products to market. And finally, design. We have to call on the world's designers to design products for the poor people of the world who really make only about $2 a day or less. How can they afford some of the products? Certainly, people who are making that kind of salary do not have the money to buy an iPhone or an iPod and that sort of thing. So now joining us from someplace in the United States, Paul Pollack, author of the book Out of Poverty, What Works When Traditional Approaches Fail. Hi, Paul. How are you today?
I'm good.
Well, thank you so much for making and being our guest here on the show and making time for us today. And I've been talking a little bit before you got on about some of the accomplishments that you yourself have had helping people lift themselves out of poverty. I want to just start out this way if we can, because Americans in general are known as very generous people towards the less fortunate, and there are countless charitable organizations that help the poor, the needy, yet poverty continues to grow in this country and around the world. Now, these well-intentioned do-good organizations are, you believe, they fall into being a victim of three myths about eradicating poverty. What are these three myths that you talk about, and why are these three myths false?
The first myth is that you can donate people out of poverty. Poor people need to invest their own time and money in order to move out of poverty, after 30 years of experience in this field, I'm convinced that it's most practical to treat poor people as customers instead of as recipients of charity, and help them. They certainly lack resources, but they need to invest their own effort, and quite often the heavily subsidized big gift policies don't work.
All right, so people have to have skin in the game. Even if they're poor, they have to have some skin in the game that gives them a sense of commitment, a sense of belonging and being part of the process. Is that fair?
Absolutely. And so in order to have them have skin in the game, then you have to go through a disciplined process of designing things that are effective enough that they're attractive and affordable enough that the poor people can afford to invest in them.
And I want to drill down on that, Paul, in just a minute. My special guest is Paul Pollack, author of the book Out of Poverty, What Works When Traditional Approaches Fail. And we were talking about the myths that some of these traditional approaches are based on, Paul. The first one was you can't donate people out of poverty. The second myth is that national economic growth is going to end poverty forever. Why is it a myth? Why is that false?
Well, national economic growth really is focused in industrial growth in the big cities. Most severe poverty is in rural areas. And when you're taking national GDP growth, it's about the same as saying that the average of my salary and Bill Gates' salary is $3 billion. It's meaningless. What you really need is economic growth in the specific locations where really poor people are. And the fact is that a lot of national economic growth bypasses poor people. Take a look at India and its spectacular growth, China's spectacular growth, and yet there are 300 million people still hungry in India.
All right, that makes sense. Now, the third myth, you and I might take a little bit different approach on this. The third myth is that big business will end poverty. Now, I believe more than any other institution, business is better positioned to help the poor people than any other institution, whether it's the church or the state or anything else. But the third myth is big business will end poverty. Why is that a myth? Why is that false?
Well, we may not be as much in disagreement as it seems. I think big business has the potential to end poverty, but unless big business goes through a revolution in how it designs, prices, markets, and distributes its products, it won't have much of an impact, as it hasn't had as much of an impact so far. So, perfect example of that, Bill Gates has made a huge positive contribution through the Gates Foundation, Bill and Melinda.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at Microsoft, which is the source of the funding provided by the Gates Foundation, how much of its products are affordable enough to make an impact on poor people?
Well, okay, let's use this Microsoft example and take it a step farther if we can, Paul, because yes, I would agree that most people that are poor are not going to be running out to buy Windows 8. That's a given. However, when you look at Microsoft in China, one of the two countries that you mentioned where there is just widespread poverty, you know, the Microsoft has a tech center there. They employ 800 people, giving them work. Of course, that means they have money to spend on other things, and it helps to build the economy. So Microsoft, in its own way, is having an impact on the economy in China and helping in some small way to lift those poor people out of poverty.
I haven't been to the Microsoft campus. I have no doubt it's in an urban area. It's in the same class as the industrial growth. It certainly is positive, and any economic activity is positive. But the really poor belt in China is the Yellow River Basin, and there's probably 150 million very poor people there, where I doubt that there is a research center located. That's the point that I was making before about national growth. A research center does contribute to national economic growth. To some extent, it has some trickle-down, but trickle-down isn't what it's cracked up to be. The question is, how do you create economic growth in the Yellow River Basin, where there are a lot of still very dirt-poor people, in spite of the wealth in other parts of China?
That's a very good question. My guest is Paul Pollack, author of the book Out of Poverty, What Works When Traditional Approaches Fail. Now, Paul, in your book, you list categorically four revolutions that are needed to end poverty. And you've taken a leading edge in the first one, which is water. In the setup, I was talking about the company that you formed to bring affordable irrigation systems to impoverished places throughout the world. The second revolution is agriculture. The third is markets. And the fourth is design. So let's pick it up with agriculture. You believe that we need to target worldwide the ability for poor people to create one-acre farms. Tell us about these one-acre farms.
Well, the fact is that of the $1 billion or so dollar a day people in the world, 75% make their living from one-acre farms. It's not a question of creating them. It's a question of those are the farms that they are in existence now. If you take a look at agriculture in a global sense, 85% of all the farms in the world are less than 5 acres in size. So we tend to think of agriculture in terms of the Western context with big farms that are mechanized, but 85% of the farms in the world are less than 5 acres, and most of the poor people are located in one-acre farms split into 4 or 5 separate plots. So if you want to make an impact on poverty, then you need to make an impact on the $750 million a day farmers who earn their living from one-acre farms. And so it's a different kind of agriculture. It's a small plot agriculture. These people have low labor costs. They can't afford high mechanization. They can compete effectively if they grow labor-intensive, high-value, off-season fruits, vegetables, and spices and crops like that. So it's a different kind of agriculture that needs to be developed in order to help poor people lift themselves out of poverty.
All right. Part and parcel with that, Paul, then, is if once you've grown the food or grown the commodity that you're talking about, you have to get it to market. So the third revolution that you talk about is a revolution in markets. Why do emerging markets operate so very poorly?
Back to the previous point,
okay.
I think big business has tremendous potential in helping end poverty, and I think that there are literally thousands of huge market opportunities serving customers that are less than $2 a day. But right now, big business, for the most part, doesn't see profit in it. There is a problem in last mile distribution. A lot of these people are in scattered villages. Those are solvable problems. And I think that there are multinationals that are looking to make commercial profits in market serving $2 a day customers. I think that is the market opportunity of the future, if not for the moral reasons, then for the huge profit opportunities in entering those markets.
All right, fair enough. And then the last of the revolutions that you talk about is design, that we need to design for the 90% of the people that live on a dollar a day. And we hear a lot of talk about the $100 computer that is going to revolutionize Africa once it is available and people start to take up with it. But you talk about it needs to be much more than that. You need to design for even more affordability. Talk to us about that revolution, if you will.
Sure. Basically, it's sort of an obvious fact that pretty much all the designers in the world focus their attention on addressing the problems of the richest 10% of the world's customers. We need a revolution in design focused on the other 90%. And again, if you're taking that 90%, if you take people who are $10 a day, that earn $10 or a day or less, that's about 5 billion people out of all the people on Earth. That requires, I call it the design based on the ruthless pursuit of affordability. When we designed drip irrigation for small farms, we started with a $4 drip irrigation kit for a kitchen garden. It's like a bucket with a tube coming out of it, irrigating 250 square feet of vegetables. It costs $3 or $4, but a woman can earn $12 from selling vegetables and improve the nutrition of her family. In a similar kind of way, there are now hundreds of products for this market being developed. An organization that I founded called DREV, located in Palo Alto, has a group of young people there have designed the ReMotion knee. It's a knee replacement joint that is installed for $80. There are hundreds of other technologies that have been developed that are radically affordable, that are making a huge impact, and one of those that is very successful commercially is the mobile phone. So I think when you're talking about computers, first of all, there's a computer that's come out recently, a tablet computer in India for $35.
Mm.
I think that there's tremendous potential for devices like a talking poster for $10. So cell phones are already available at a very low price, but there's a rapidly evolving revolution in phone apps that serve the poor.
All right.
So there are literally hundreds of opportunities with a very big market potential at serving customers that live on less than $2 a day.
My guest is Paul Pollack, author of the book, Out of Poverty, What Works When Traditional Approaches Fail. And Paul, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Out of Poverty?
People think of poor people as hopeless, pathetic. I personally interviewed 3,000 of them. They are fun, entrepreneurial, hardworking, and they've become my teachers and my friends. And I think this is a challenging, exciting field, and it's a lot of fun. It's not a depressing area. And it's the biggest untapped market opportunity available to entrepreneurs in existence.
All right. That is great. Paul, it has been a delight. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about your book, where would you direct them to go?
My book is called Out of Poverty. It's available on Amazon. It's published by Barrett Kohler. PaulPolak.com has my blog, and it has a lot more information about what we do.
Paul, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
I really enjoyed it.